The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Richard Palmer, standing in once again for Mr. Stephen Flurry. He arrived safely back in the UK maybe an hour or two ago. He quite understandably didn't want to walk straight off a plane and into a live radio studio, but he should be back on Monday. And I'm speaking to you from our newly improved radio studio in Edstone, England, at the basement here at Edstone Hall. We've used the brief hiatus for broadcasting as an opportunity to improve the setup. So it looks nice and neat in here, more professional. We've been doing all kinds of fiddling and testing and tweaking to try and get this small, square, brick basement room here at Edstone to sound a little less like a small, square, brick basement room. We've also got a new mixer to help us get some better sound quality, both for the live stream and especially for the podcast recording that goes out later. So that's why I'm a bit nervous today, a little bit more so than usual for being on live radio, that is. You know, usually after making these changes, I'd be anxiously hovering behind the producer in our little alcove next to the studio, ready to start running around trying to fix things if the new setup's not working or if there are any unanticipated problems. But today I can't leave the microphone, so I don't see the studio phone ringing, so I've just got to assume everything is working fine. Well, it's been a dramatic start to the year in Europe in 2016. Just over a week ago, Mr. McDonald had an article up on our website called Germany, Migrants, and Angela Merkel's Big Lie. And now you can see similar articles just about everywhere. We talked about this on our Trumpet Hour program exactly a week ago. And we talked about how there were more and more articles saying the same thing and drawing that same conclusion. But that really was only if you went out and looked for it. You know, if you looked at press focusing on Germany, for example. Now, in the last week or so, there have been articles on this story on things like the BBC and the New York Times, these usually bastions for liberal or left-wing thinking. And there's been some really major and surprising developments, or shocking developments, I meant to say, on this story. This will probably be my main story on Trumpet Hour. However, it's such a big story, I'm not going to get anywhere, not going to be able to cover close to the whole thing in just 5 minutes on Trumpet Hour. So I'd also like to use some of the time I've got today to describe to you just the really shocking news that's been coming out of Germany this week. So I'll dive right in on New Year's Eve and then going into New Year's Day. Over that evening, many young Germans were out partying. And at the time, a crowd of around 1,000 people gathered outside the Cologne or the Köln train station. And these men were described as being of Arab or North American appearance, was how that was put in official reports in several different cases. And any woman coming out of that station found herself surrounded by large groups of these men and was grabbed out and groped. And there are some really terrible stories from these women. They had to try and walk out of the station with all of these men grabbing at them. Many were robbed. Some were raped. So far, there have been reported over 150 sexual assaults, rapes, and robberies at this one station, at this one night. So this is a massive level of crime. And out of those 150 reported crimes, 110 were sexual assaults. A police report that was leaked to the press states that women literally had to run the gauntlet through the mass of drunken men in a way you can't describe. And one person talked about how they arrived at this station and saw, this is a quote, countless weeping women. That was the effect of these crimes. And the police were absolutely overwhelmed. They they didn't or couldn't stop what was going on here. The men were not at all listening to the police or respecting any of their authority. In fact, they were shooting fireworks at the police. And even one of these women, they put a firework in the hood of her coat, and she suffered terrible burns and scars. So that's an absolutely shocking story just over and by itself. But then when you start to look at how the German establishment responded to that, the German government, the local government, the police, the media, this just gets even worse. So the next day, the Cologne police put out a press release or a statement describing what New Year's Day had been like for them. And here's what it says. Here's how they described what was going on at the station and elsewhere on New Year's Eve. A joyful party atmosphere. As in years past, we are looking at a mostly peaceful New Year's celebration. Reasons to intervene were mostly physical assault and disturbance of the peace. So they tried to pretend this whole thing never happened. There were 150 reported crimes occurring on that evening at the Cologne police station, and that this was the report that they came out with the next day. A joyful party atmosphere. We had our trumpet hour program the next day, January 1st, and we were talking about Mr. McDonald's article and about the rise in migrant crime, about how it's being covered up and the implications for Germany. And we knew nothing about this story because it hadn't been reported. The police didn't want to talk about it. The media didn't want to cover it. They just tried to ignore the story. Now, something this big couldn't be hushed up. And so you did have reports coming out, and your women are going on social media describing what had happened. You then started to get some broadcasters and reporters, mainly on the right, and websites, writing about what was happening. And so then that started to force the more mainstream broadcasters to actually cover this event. And now you have ZDF, a big German public broadcaster, maybe similar to PBS or the BBC, has been forced to come out and apologize for not reporting on this mass sexual assault earlier. And the local, a website focusing on various different, they have different websites focusing on news in different European countries. This is from their German-focused website. Almost as great a scandal as the attacks themselves has been the failure of national newspapers and public broadcasters to report on them until days after the event. Little was heard on the New Year's Eve attacks beyond local media in Cologne until 3 days later on Monday. It was, quote, a scandal that it took days for the public media to take up the reports, the former Interior Minister Hans-Peter Friedrich said, and he accused journalists of operating a cartel of silence and a lockdown of news. So they didn't want to report on it. And still, we're only just learning more and more details of what went on New Year's Eve across Germany and Europe. Because it turns out it wasn't just Cologne either. Once you started to get the reports from Cologne finally reaching the press, then it turned out there were other things going on in similar cities. So Hamburg, there was something similar. There were gangs of Arab and North African youth roaming the streets. Girls were told that their lives would be in danger if they left the nightclubs there and went out into the streets. There were over 50 cases of harassment reported there, around 40 cases of sexual harassment. And again, just some really horrible and disturbing stories coming from the women there and what they'd had to go through. And then on a smaller scale, there were similar incidents in Frankfurt, in Helsinki, in Zurich, in Salzburg. So this is, you know, this is Finland. This is Austria. So you've got other European countries with the same problem, a Europe-wide problem. But even after this, even after, like I said, this broadcaster, ZDF, was forced to apologize, officials are still covering up parts of the story. So, for example, the German government officials have finally kind of admitted that this happened, admitted that there was a problem here, admitted that these attacks had been carried out by people of Arab or North African appearance. But they're insisting that there's no evidence that the people doing this were immigrants, that there's no evidence that they're asylum seekers or that they're people that have recently arrived from Syria or elsewhere as part of this wave of migrants. So essentially they're saying, yes, there were young Arab men doing this, but there's no evidence they were asylum seekers. Now, making that argument is probably not going to help things. I think if people start to get worried about a crime wave or mass assault from people that of Arabic and African-looking appearance, as they kind of put it, then that is still going to trigger a backlash against immigrants, whether or not it's proven that these specific immigrants were responsible. But more than that, now that even that has been shown to be untrue. An internal German police report from Cologne, I pronounce it two different ways. The Germans, we pronounce it slightly differently to the way the Germans do. An internal police report there about the attacks was leaked to Spiegel and to Bild. And this report showed that the police have plenty of evidence that at least some of the attackers had recently arrived from Syria. So the police, they were there trying to get some control over what was happening, and the migrants weren't having any of it, and they weren't afraid of the police or getting trouble with the law. And one shouted, "I am Syrian. You have to treat me kindly. Mrs. Merkel invited me." Another one pulled out his residency permit and he tore it up and said, "You can't do anything to me. I can get a new one tomorrow." And so I guess he's meaning that he just tore up the only official piece of paperwork that the police could use to track and identify him. And he says, "Well, that's okay. I can just go to wherever they go to get these papers, pick up a new one tomorrow." And then a local paper reported that 15 asylum seekers from Syria had briefly been held by police in connection with the attack and had been released. Another newspaper quoted an anonymous police officer saying that his squad detained several people who had only been in Germany for a few weeks. And this policeman said of those people, 14 were from Syria and one from Afghanistan. That's the truth, although it hurts. And then the newspaper quoted a second police officer confirming the 15 were held and that they had, quote, residence permits for the asylum procedure. And they took down their names. They're in the police records, he said. So still, you've got government and you've got the media trying to cover up parts of this story. As Mr. McDonald pointed out in that article that I mentioned last week, let me just pull out the title again, "Germany Migrants and Angela Merkel's Big Lie." This is dangerous. And covering up and just hiding the situation isn't going to make it go away. And instead, it's going to provoke a backlash not just against the migrants, but against the government and all the officials that have tried to cover up and hide what's been going on here. And there was a similar article, or another article in the local, making a similar point called "Silence on Sex Crimes Will Make Racism Worse." This article warned, in the last few months, it has seemed that the authorities and the national media would rather sacrifice transparency for the sake of stability. It was days before the police gave full descriptions of the offenders in Cologne, despite a call for eyewitnesses. The national media also ignored the story until a wave of anger on social media made covering it unavoidable. And then it goes through example after example of authorities covering other things up this year, many of which Mr. McDonald talked about in his article. So he gave the example of a hospital, at least one hospital forced to hire guards to protect nurses who felt intimidated by the refugees they were treating. It talked about a women's council in Hesse who wrote an open letter to the state parliament saying that they had substantial evidence of sexual abuse and of forced prostitution within refugee shelters. In August, there was a local paper that heard some news about the rape of a 13-year-old girl by a refugee. And so they went to the police and asked for crime statistics in refugee centres. And the police came back and said there were no rapes, no sexual assaults, completely covering everything up when this paper had hard evidence that at least one had been committed. So this police department was essentially caught lying. And there have been more and more accusations like this. And there's a group that kind of got together to make this point a few months ago. And one police union chief said, "There's a lot of glossing over going on, but this doesn't represent reality." So You know, just last week, Mr. McDonald was talking about this cover-up and about the backlash that it would provoke once it becomes more well-known. And you're seeing now it becoming more well-known. It's now being discussed openly throughout most of the media that German authorities, that the police, even the media that we'll get to in a minute, was trying to cover up the extent of what was going on here and still are. Just because it's being talked about a bit more, I don't think means that the police departments have come completely clean or even remotely close to that regarding what's been going on here. I'll just read a little bit more from this same article in The Local. They write, the national media also seem to be in on the act. Despite the seriousness of the allegations of police cover-ups and a pattern of evidence of sexual abuse, major news outlets stay well away from the issue. This is hardly surprising in a media climate which is far more comfortable wringing its hands over the far right than offering objective reporting. Newsrooms are at one and the same time scared of appearing racist and terrified of stirring up a latent racism that they believe still exists in German society. The Nazi past still casts a long shadow, but whatever the intentions, covering up the facts doesn't help anyone. This journal in The Local is right. And he does point out that in this cover-up, maybe most of people do have good intentions here. They know Germany's history. And so they know that there is a risk of that being repeated, of a real crisis in Germany and change in the way Germans deal with migrants. So there is some justification for what they're doing. But as he points out, in trying to make this cover up, really it's going to do the opposite. You know, if the police, the government, the media cover this up, the truth will still get out and it will just end up undermining trust in the police, in the government, in the media. Now, there's one really dangerous aspect to this story. And we mentioned there was a mob of around 1,000 doing this in Cologne. I haven't really seen any figures for what was going on in Hamburg, but it sounds like you could safely say at least 100. And you probably certainly had hundreds of people outside of Cologne committing these kind of crimes across Germany on this evening. So how many people do you think the police have under arrest for this? Well, as of an article published yesterday, the answer is none. Zero. No arrests. Of these 1,000 people that were committing this mob sexual assault on any women that they could find, they've all got away with it. And across Germany, there's only been a handful of arrests for related crimes. So two were arrested for harassing women in Cologne on Sunday night. So not for the New Year's Eve crimes. And then there were three Syrian migrants, recent Syrian asylum seekers, that were arrested for gang raping two German teenagers in a village elsewhere in Germany. Another shocking crime, and one that is very clearly traces back to recent migrants. But for that 1,000-strong mob outside of Cologne Station, for what went on in Hamburg, what went on that night in the other cities, no one has been arrested. Now, I think there were maybe some taken into custody on that night, but then they were released and just let off and let go scot-free, usually on that same night. So nobody's been punished. There's no asylum seekers that are lined up to get sent back to Syria. Even if Germany tried to do that, I think Europe's human rights laws would probably get in the way or at least greatly slow that down. And so how likely do you think it is that this is going to happen again, that these asylum seekers will try the same thing again, knowing that they got away with this completely? Now, the Cologne police said they were investigating, a bit later on Thursday, they said they were investigating 16 suspects. So that's, they have the suspects, they're not under arrest, they're investigating them, but that's 16 out of a crowd of 1,000. That's barely more than 1%. The local police union chief, Rainer Wendt, he said, it is highly uncertain whether in the case of the Cologne attacks, even one conviction will be made. So 1,000-strong mob doing this absolutely outrageous attack in Cologne and not one person punished. And this police chief said they will feel absolutely emboldened to commit such acts again in the shadow of anonymity. And so how much confidence are Germans going to have now in their government, in their police, in their media after this? You know, they tried to cover it up and now no one is punished so far. And even if they do eventually arrest someone, you know, how many, what's it going to be? One, two, five, a handful of people? It certainly seems just about impossible they're going to get even a sizable percentage, even a double-digit percentage of the 1,000 people that committed this. And so how is a young lady in Cologne going to feel about maybe having gone through this ordeal or having a friend who has? You know, how safe will she feel knowing that every single person in that mob is still out there, is still free, is still on the loose? That on that night, the authorities did not and could not stop them. That the police did not and could not keep her safe. That no one has punished. You know, that's a really scary and unsettling situation to be in. And so it comes as no surprise that in Dusseldorf, next to Cologne, people are starting to take things into their own hands. They're not trusting the police anymore to look after him. Somebody set up, or some people set up, a Dusseldorf is watching group of citizens. And they made clear this is not a vigilante group that seeks to punish perpetrators, but instead they said it's a group of citizens that aims to protect their city's women. And so they said they'll organize people to be out there at major events in the city center, or at major events, they'll be out there at the city center, they'll be out there at weekends. And in less than a day, 2,300 people signed up to join them. That's 2,300 people that at least felt in that moment they felt strongly enough about this and they were worried enough about this that they were willing to donate their time and to take the risk to stand up and that the police weren't going to do the job, to stand up and to protect their city's women from these migrants. That shows a strength of feeling here. And this scandal has only just come out, and this outrage in the last few days. We're only now just starting to get the story here. And so this is going to have political ramifications that are just going to keep going. And we'll have a short break now. We'll talk about some of those ramifications a bit more after the break and what this outrage means for Germany.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of The Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG. It's at 101.3 FM or online at kpcg.fm. We're talking about a series of absolutely shocking mass attacks by immigrants from the Middle East on women across Germany on New Year's Eve. There was most notably, there was 1,000-strong mob assaulting and even raping some women outside of the Cologne train station. They attacked police and threw fireworks at them. They were not stopped. Nobody has been arrested. The head of the local police union says he believes no one will be convicted. Now, there's a fair bit of coverage out there talking about this and about what this says about migrants, or people making points about what this says about Islam and their respect for women. But I'd like to talk about what this means for Germany. And this is where we'll take what first seems like a bit of a diversion and a detour, but we will come back to these shocking migrant attacks. Now, last week we were talking about Mr. McDonald's article on the Trumpet Hour, and Rob Morley, who was hosting then, asked me about the parallels with the 1930s and whether there was any truth in people saying that there were some parallels with what was going on in Germany and Europe with the 1930s. Now, when I go on Trumpet Hour, I usually, or mostly at least if I have time, come in with some notes typed up, and it's not too hard to predict the direction that a lot of the conversation is going to go in. And so often I'll have notes for some of the questions that come up that I can use to help answer. But then there are often questions I've not predicted, and so I have to talk without notes. That's usually where you hear me and ah quite a bit more. And so last week, Rob asked me about the parallels with the 1930s. And it's a good question, but it's not one that I had really anticipated. So I didn't have the greatest of answers. But now I've had more time to think about that. And that's something I'd like to talk a bit more about now, because it is a point that has a lot, I think, to teach us now about what is going on in Europe, and even about how Germany will respond to these migrant attacks. And Europe today, especially southern Europe, that has been worst hit by the financial crisis, is full of parallels to the 1930s. It really is quite dramatic. Now, a lot of this started with the 2008 financial crisis. And to really understand Europe today, one of the big things you need to understand is that the crisis has not gone away for Europe. And that's a bit different to our regular everyday experience. I mean, really, it's not really gone away from America either, but it's much better hidden. So, for example, in the United States, the government debt before the financial crisis was around $10 trillion. Now it's over $18 trillion. So there's been a massive increase in government borrowing, the type that you usually only see during a war. But in terms of everyday life, because you know, this high skyrocketing debt isn't something that really affects us hugely right now. It's something where the majority of the negative effects are in the future. So things are much more normal in Britain, in America, compared to Southern Europe, much more like our everyday experience. Now, I'm not saying that everything is great in Americans' economy or that things are as good as they were before the 2008 recession. But just to give you an example, some statistics show what I'm talking about. Americans' unemployment rate is around 5 or 6%. You compare that to Greece or Spain, where unemployment is around 25%. So in America, about 1 in 20 people who are willing and able to work are not working and are looking for a job. In Greece and Spain, that's about 1 in 4. So that's a huge difference. And it's been this level for a long time, for getting on to around 5 years now. So you have an entire generation of young people, really, where people have just not been able to find jobs. And once you get people out of work for that long, it causes major problems just for the economy for years and years to come, because then it's much, much harder to get people back into the job market. And youth unemployment for the young people, it's around 50%. So that is half of people between the ages of 16 and 25 who are not in education. So it doesn't take into account those in education. Half of all people between 16 and 25 who want to work cannot find a job. That's a huge figure. And so then you have huge numbers of young people pouring out of these countries because they can't get jobs, looking for work elsewhere. Sometimes I like to watch the UK TV show Top Gear. And a few years ago, they did a program in Spain that really showed the physical evidence of what was going on in Spain. You know, John Kenneth Galbraith, the economist, very, very famously said, economics is very useful for the employment of economists, meaning that usually economics generates a ton of numbers that don't really mean anything and don't affect our everyday lives. When you have a crisis like Greece and Spain have had, that's completely different. The evidence for these statistics, for these absolutely terrible conditions in Greece and Spain, are everywhere. So on this TV show, they were driving down motorways that were just completely empty. They were drag racing in a fully built international airport, again, that was just completely empty and shut down. They went through whole housing estates with nobody there. The houses had been built and then nobody could afford to live in them. And there were no jobs around in those areas. And you have a similar story in Greece. A few months ago, I remember reading a story about how there's a new motorway that they built before the crisis to get some proper road connections to some of Greece's islands. And it really sped up the travel time from these islands. And then the financial crisis hit and the government was forced to introduce tolls on this new motorway. And then the Greeks are now so poor that they can't afford the tolls. And so this motorway sits largely empty. So seeing a huge, in some ways minor, but just very visible examples of how the crisis is still affecting these countries. And you have huge increases in poverty over here. Every time I might talk a bit more about economics and the prospect for Europe later. But the point is, Southern Europe is still living through very, very tough economic times. And that is leading to very abnormal political times. On The Trumpet and on KPCG over the past few weeks, we've talked about the political earthquake that's hitting Southern Europe. And how you've got these completely unknown political parties popping up all over the place. And meanwhile, you've got parties that used to dominate the political scene of their countries in kind of the same way that the Republicans and the Democrats do in America. These type of political parties have been disappearing almost overnight. And we saw there was exactly the same thing during the 1930s, after that great financial crash of 1929. You know, political parties refused to work for each other. They blamed each other for the mess. You know, we tend to think about the very obvious rise of the Nazi Party. But there was a political crisis across all of Europe in those days. You know, there were the fragmentation of the political landscape caused a lot of coalitions to have to form. And if they were formed at all, they were short-lived. You know, Germany held elections in 1928, then in 1930, and then three elections in 12 months during a period from 1932 to 1933. So very similar to what Greece has had to go through. Today, I haven't counted how many elections they've had since 2008, but they've been through a whole load of different governments. They had two elections alone just in 2015. France, just going back to the 1930s, they had five governments between May 1932 and January 1934. So in an under two-year period, five governments. So you just had this kind of paralysis where the politics fragmented and people, and the governments just couldn't respond to the crisis. And in Spain, these were so deep that there was a civil war. And we're seeing a very similar pattern now. And we saw this, you know, very clearly after the financial crisis, after the 2008 crisis. The governments of Italy, Greece, the Netherlands, Spain, Portugal, Hungary, Finland, the Czech Republic, Slovenia, Slovakia, and Iceland all fell before they were due to have elections. They were all forced into early elections and forced out of power. You know, this sweep of governments across Europe in the wake of that crisis. And then in World War II, you had the new parties rising. So again, most famously, the Nazis, who before the crisis, they were a weird fringe party. In the 1928 elections, the year before the financial crisis, the Nazi Party won 2.6% of the vote. They were Germany's ninth-placed party. And then just 2 years later, after the financial crisis set in, they won 18.3%. And they were Germany's second-most popular party. So they went from 2.6 to 18.3. 1932, so 2 years again later, or 4 years on from that 2.6 result in 1928, they won nearly 40% of the vote. So they'd gone from a weird fringe party to the biggest party. And again, this wasn't just a German phenomenon. In Austria, you had Heimwehr. They're a far-right group, kind of similar to the Nazis, but they didn't want unification with Germany. Czechoslovakia, the Nazi Sudeten German party, again, came from nowhere. Romania, the Iron Guard. They went from being banned to... They went from being banned to coming third. In France, you had a similar thing. The Croix de Fer League, they had 500 members in 1928, 400,000 in 1935. And then they got banned in 1936, and the leader started the French Social Party, which grew to become one of France's largest right-wing parties. And you've got exactly the same trend today. And I'm not saying that these new political parties that we see today in Europe are Nazi parties. They're not. And to be honest, some of them aren't really all that extreme. But just like the 1930s, they're coming from nowhere to become major, major players. You know, Podemos, Ciudadanos, Syriza, the National Front, True Finns, I think they've changed their name actually, but True Finns, and then I believe it's the Sweden Democrats in Sweden. They were all non-existent or had tiny levels of support before the financial crisis, and now they are major political players. And those are just the ones that have won recent success. There are others all across Europe. And in the 1930s, this all fed into a vicious cycle. You know, the rise of new parties meant that the kind of traditional coalitions no longer worked, or the main parties that used to be strong enough to form a government on their own couldn't. And so often there were no good options for government. There were often early elections, and that just led to more inaction, led to not... Those early elections meant problems weren't confronted, problems got worse. And it fed this perception that the political process was broken, that a new approach was needed. And so it helped new parties grow in strength. Or you'd get the traditional parties kind of clubbing together to form a government to keep the new parties out. So you'd get maybe the main left-wing party and the main right-wing party form a coalition. And then these went on often to be completely ineffectual. Again, they couldn't solve the problem because they were so divided. The left and the right-wing halves could never agree on anything, could never solve any problems. The problems, again, got worse. And support for these fringe parties just skyrocketed. And look, we're seeing, again, quite clearly the same thing today. Look at the mess Spain is in, where, right, we've talked about on the Trumpet Hour, how it's incredibly hard for anyone there to put together a stable coalition. Where you've just got this rise of the new parties have meant that neither the main right-wing party or the main left-wing party have been able to put together a government the way that they're used to. Exactly the way things went in the 1930s. So let's start bringing this subject round back to the migrant mobs in Germany. Now, the main destructive force in the 1930s was a complete collapse in confidence in the existing political system. And in this case, the collapse was spurred by the economy. You know, it was the financial crisis. Governments failed to spot the crisis, they failed to stop the crisis, they failed to deal with the crisis. And so that turned into a backlash against not just the particular leader who was in charge at the time of the crisis, but against the entire political system. And so Germany was one of the worst hit and was one of the most unstable. Britain was one of the least affected and so suffered only a kind of a more minor political wobble. Now, it wasn't economics only that were involved, but they played a big part. And we've seen the same thing now in the countries worst hit by the economic crisis. So again, just to give one example, in Greece, PASOK used to be the equivalent of the Democratic Party in America, this main left-wing party. Now they have the support of about 5% of the electorate. Yeah, that's a huge political earthquake in just a short amount of time. But this financial crisis and this political earthquake hasn't hit Germany yet, at least not in the same way. You still have the rise of the Alternative for Deutschland, but you're talking about a party that sometimes makes headlines for getting over 10%. That's still a big deal. I don't want to undermine that. For somewhere like Germany, where there's a huge built-in reluctance to vote for a fringe party. The fact that so many people are doing that is a major development. But it's not quite the same as where you've got, say, Greece, where you've got the country ruled by a party that barely existed before the financial crisis. And a lot of the reason for that is the financial crisis hasn't really, or hasn't hit Germany anywhere close to the same way it's hit Greece. You know, their unemployment rate is even lower than America's. It's at 4.5%. They're certainly at risk, but they've not had this crisis hit across the middle class and across the whole country the way Southern Europe has. But the way this migrant crisis has been handled, that could have the same effect. Germans have been lied to by the press. They've been lied to by the police. They've been lied to by local government. They've been lied to by national government officials. And we've talked a fair bit about the anger directed at, to the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and how there'll be more of that backlash once more of this comes out and on the trumpet and at KPCG, and rightly so. In Cologne this week, people were out there protesting against Merkel. There were about 200 or 300 people out in Cologne outside the cathedral after the attacks. One had a sign saying, "Mrs. Merkel, what are you doing? This is scary." And as the political fallout from what happened here unfolds, there will be more pressure going on her, even more than is there already. But this also, it goes way beyond just Angela Merkel. She's not directly responsible for the Cologne police force covering this up. Now, certainly there's an argument that she has some responsibility as chancellor, but she's certainly not responsible for what the press have been doing, the way that they've covered this up, the way that they've refused to report on this and be forthright about what's happening. And so you could see, as this gets worse, the same collapse in trust, not just of Miss Merkel, not just of, say, her party even, or the government, but just the whole establishment that we've seen in Southern Europe. You could see that spread to Germany too. In that article that he wrote just over a week ago, Mr. MacDonald wrote, "The more disillusioned, frustrated and angry the German people become, the more vulnerable they will be to radical politics and radical leaders with radical solutions." Radical solutions. And so as more and more people see the problem, this is going to be about way more than just getting rid of Miss Merkel and replacing her with somebody less migrant friendly. People will be crying out for someone to come and fix the whole system. The migrant crisis is not just undermining the trust of people in Miss Merkel, but in the way Germany is governed. And we've certainly not heard the end of this crisis. So at least according to the latest figures, there are 1.1 million migrants entering Germany last year. And if only 1% are troublesome in the way that we saw in Cologne on New Year's Eve, that's still 11,000 people. The Associated Press had a report this week called, "As 2016 dawns, Europe braces for more waves of migrants." You could easily see another 1.1 million coming into Germany in 2016. Probably even another more than 1.1 million, at least if nothing is done to stop that. There's certainly reports coming out from Greece and about Turkey that the pace of migrants arriving in Greece has not changed. It's still as big as ever. I think they have an occasional dip if there's a politically, particularly cold day or a particularly stormy sea. But in general, they're still coming as fast as ever. And we've talked about the effect that this migrant crisis is having on kind of, you know, a macro level, with Europe thinking about shrinking its free border zone, about Europe trying to put together a kind of proto-European army to protect its borders. But it's affecting society too, the Paris attacks. And now this, a mass sexual assault by 1,000 migrants. You know, that's going to change Europe on the large scale with borders and this army, etc. But this is going to change Europe's society too. And we've talked before about how terrorist attacks will fundamentally change Europe, that Europeans will be faced with this choice. They'll either have to accept a certain level of attacks or decide to crack down on and suspect all Muslims. And we've talked about how they'll take the latter course. Well, the New Year's Eve crisis, what we saw with those 1,000 people, that's going to have the same effect, feed into the same response, will turn people against the establishment media, government, the police. You know, these organizations are not necessarily doing a great job right now. There's major problems with all of them. But periods of turmoil are very dangerous in Europe. And the way they've been handling this crisis now could provoke, and outrages like what you see in Cologne could provoke a major change in Germany. Radical solutions. I will have one more break. We'll be right back and we'll talk a little more about Europe's economy in 2016.
This is KPCG-FM and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on KPCG at 101.3 FM. We started out today talking about New Year's Eve in Germany, where mobs of Syrian or at least recent migrants were out sexually harassing and even raping German women on a huge scale. More recently, we've been talking about how the economic crisis has destabilized Europe in a similar way to the 1930s, and about how so much of the political upheaval was driven by a collapse in trust in the political establishment, and about how the way that German officials have tried to cover up what happened on New Year's Eve is driving the same kind of collapse in trust within Germany now. I want to change tack slightly for the last few minutes of the program and talk about something else related to the parallels of the 1930s. Another major danger that could come in 2016, another major collapse in trust that we're seeing that could well drive events in 2016. Now, we talked about how the collapse of major political parties across Southern Europe mirrors that same collapse in the 1930s. But why hasn't that parallel kind of followed all the way through? You know, things are bad and we're certainly seeing political earthquakes, but there are no fascists in charge of Southern European countries. Why is that? Well, part of the reason is that democracy as a political system, I think, is more resilient than it was back then. You know, this is a world where dictators like Vladimir Putin or Robert Mugabe still try to keep up the illusion of democracy. But back in the 1930s, renouncing democracy wasn't as big a deal. You know, the idea that democracy was intrinsically weak and flawed was much more common. And so nowadays, it's a much bigger step for a country to renounce democracy. But perhaps the most important reason is that even though things are bad and have been bad for several years now, they're not as bad economically as they were in the 1930s. But if the economy should get worse, with Europe already unstable, what would the results be? Now, I wanted to talk briefly about the risks for Europe going badly with the economy this year. And Stratfor had a remarkable article on their website this week called "The International Banking System Faces an Existential Threat." And this makes a really interesting point in line with the forecasts that we've been making at the Trumpet about where Europe's economy is heading. This article was not forecasting an economic collapse, but it was saying because of the financial collapses in recent years, the way we're doing banking is under threat. People have lost confidence. Again, this mirrors exactly what we were talking about on the political scene, but just on the economic one. People have lost confidence, not just in the banks, but in the way we do banking, the way we conduct the economy. And in this article, Stratfor concluded, as 2015 fades into 2016, it's hard to think of a time in the past 300 years when the banker's position in society has been more at risk. So there's a growing dissatisfaction with our economic system, with the way we run our economies. And there's a good reason to be. And this article from Stratfor points out that today's banks basically print money. If you deposit $1,000 in the bank account, they'll use this money to go out and lend far more than $1,000. The bank is essentially then creates money out of thin air. And then this article goes through some of the history of banking about how this way of banking leads to a kind of a boom and bust cycle where the economy does well and then cycles round to doing badly before cycling round to doing well again. And at the Trumpet, we've pointed to the problems of debt and this creating money out of thin air as a major cause of the weaknesses in our economies. And then, so now people are looking at a solution that puts the government in charge of creating this extra money and not the banks. So over the last week or two, Switzerland announced that it would hold a referendum on this kind of brand new way of conducting an economy. The referendum is on a law that would stop commercial banks from creating money. So if you deposited $1,000 in your bank account, that bank would only be able to use that money to loan out another $1,000. It couldn't go and use it to loan out $50,000, or I've forgotten exactly what the ratio that they're allowed to use is. And doing this would stop a lot of the problems. The idea is it would stop a bank going bust, because if they can cover all of their deposits, they're going to be a lot more stable. Now, I don't really want to get too bogged down into the merits or failings of this system, but instead, I think it makes a really interesting point that people are getting fed up with the whole economic system, just like the political system that we talked about earlier. You know, this is an economic system that is dominated by America, but Europe is leading the way now at looking at a brand new system. So this is Switzerland and Iceland as well, are kind of the countries taking the lead at looking at this radical new solution. Countries both on the periphery, at least political speaking, of the European Union. And we've talked for years about how Europe will form its own economic system to replace America's, and this could be the start of that. And think about what Switzerland is doing here. They're choosing to take this, or at least put on the table in a referendum, this great leap into the unknown. They're on the brink of abandoning the way banking and really the entire economy has worked in the Western world for 300 years. And so the fact that they're there ready to abandon all this really shows how a huge level of dissatisfaction with the way the economic system today works. Now, I had hoped to get a little bit into some new EU banking rules that came into force at the start of 2016. I don't really have time to get into those in a huge amount of detail, but basically new rules make it much more likely that people with large sums of money and businesses with what for businesses are actually fairly small sums of money deposited in a bank account, it makes it much more likely that they will lose that money if a bank goes bust. That in 2016 is going to make all of Europe's banks much more unstable. The problem is especially acute in Italy, where in early December you had a pensioner commit suicide after losing all of his savings as a bank went bust. This is in Italy is a G8 economy. If they get into trouble, if they have a banking crisis, you know, that's not Greece. This is something far bigger than Greece. This is something that perhaps it would even be so big that it would push the migrant crisis off the front page of the newspapers. And so, you know, you've got these new rules that could potentially make things a lot more unstable. And now you've got some countries on the periphery of Europe starting to look for a whole new way of doing their banking and managing and controlling their economy, just abandoning the main way that it's been done for 300 years. As I said, that's a big development. And at the Trumpet, we've been forecasting that there would be a new economic system, led from Europe. And even if this particular experiment that you see in Switzerland does not get put into force, just the fact that they're willing to hold a referendum on this shows how dissatisfied they are with the current American-led system. So this is where we leave Europe at the start of the year. The migrant crisis is growing, is getting worse, and with these mass riots in Germany, could well be reaching a new phase. Germany's government, the media, the police are lying to their people, leading to the people becoming fed up with the whole political establishment. And at the same time, Europe is getting fed up not just with their political systems, but with their American-dominated economic system. So a revolution is bubbling in Europe, and all it would take to set this off is an intensification of the migrant crisis, a or another economic crash, and it seems that they're both on the horizon. I thank you for listening today. For more information on the trends we've been talking about and where they're leading and the hope that there is in a world that's becoming increasingly dark, go to our website, www.thetrumpet.com. I'm off to record Trumpet Hour in a few minutes, and that will air later today and give you an overview of all the week's news. The Week in Review is one of our most popular programs, so if you can catch it, stick around, listen later on. If not, you can listen again later via the podcast on SoundCloud or at kpcg.fm. Thanks for listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and goodbye till Monday.